this is Gemini Control at 16 hours, 29 minutes, and 37 seconds after liftoff. Crew of Gemini 10 has a full day's work cut out for them. Here in Mission Control, the flight planners have come up with today's flight plan activities. They're scheduled to wake up in approximately 10 minutes. As a matter of fact, they'll be crossing the stations of the Eastern Test Range within about 4 minutes. At the time they wake up, there's a scheduled eat period for about an hour. And then over the Carnarvon Pass, at these times are all in ground elapsed time after liftoff. At 17 hours and 25 minutes, there's a flight plan update. Essentially, the information I'll be reading now from the Carnarvon, Australia tracking station. Then at 18 hours and 15 minutes, there's the next United States side pass, where the crew will report their own status and purge the fuel cells. At 19 hours and 5 minutes, the Carnarvon will give them a go-no-go for landing area 29-1. At 20 hours, 21 minutes, and 22 seconds, the Agena primary propulsion system will be used for a 340 foot per second retrograde height adjust maneuver. And immediately thereafter, they will begin the preliminary stand-up extravehicular activity preparation. And at 21 hours, 20 minutes through 22 hours and 20 minutes, there's an hour of eat period scheduled for the crew. At 22 hours, 38 minutes, 25 seconds, there will be a quasigrade circularization maneuver of approximately 83 feet per second. The final stand-up EVA preparation will begin at 22 hours and 40 minutes and run approximately an hour to 23 hours and 40 minutes after liftoff. At 23 hours and 52 minutes, 10 minutes before sunrise, they will open the spacecraft hatch. The stand-up EVA procedure will be essentially the same as the flight plan originally, except the experiment S-13, the ultraviolet astronomical camera experiment, will be deleted. The MSC-8 color patch experiment will be conducted as scheduled. The synoptic terrain photography, S-5, will be done while the hatch is open by astronaut Collins. At 24 hours and 58 minutes, approximately sunset, spacecraft sunset, that is, will be the completion of the stand-up EVA. At 26 hours, 30 minutes through 27 hours, a D5 star occultation experiment using the Agena for attitude control will be conducted. At 27 hours, 15 minutes, the phase adjust maneuver, approximately 4 foot per second posigrade, will be made using the Agena. And also, they will pitch down and take several S5 synoptic terrain and S6 synoptic weather photographs. At 28 hours, 3 minutes, through 28 hours and 40 minutes, they will again run the D5 star occultation experiment, again using the Agena to align the spacecraft. At 28 hours, 55 minutes, the tracking ship Coastal Sentry will give the crew a planned landing area update for several landing areas in advance. Also, a flight plan report. At 28 hours, 40 minutes through 29 hours, 40 minutes is another hour's eat period. 29 hours, 20 minutes, Hawaii will take the crew status report and also a flight plan update. The crew at this time will purge both fuel cells, 1 and 2. At 29 hours, 40 minutes through 39 hours, ground elapsed time is a sleep period. During the sleep period just ending at the present time, there has been no propellant used by the in the Ohm system. Approximately 380 pounds of propellant are remaining. Of this, 180 pounds are fuel, 200 pounds of oxidizer. originally loaded aboard the spacecraft were 950 pounds of propellant. At 16 hours, 34 minutes, and 44 seconds after liftoff, this is Gemini Control. This is Gemini Control at 16 hours, 54 minutes into the flight. Gemini 10 is within range of the Canary Islands station. The black team flight controllers, headed by Flight Director Cliff Charlesworth, is in the process of taking over the consoles here in the Mission Control Center. And we are estimating a change of shift press briefing in the news center at Houston at approximately 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. This is Gemini Control. And Gemini 10 and its Agena are down over Australia within range of the Carnarvon Station. Gemini 10 is in a 413 by 160 nautical mile orbit. The Agena 8 is in a 215 by 217 nautical mile orbit. And the spacecraft lags the 8 Agena by about 250 nautical miles. We have a tape from the start of this Carnarvon pass. This is our first contact with the crew since they awakened, and we'll play that for you now. We might as well start with a brief rundown by Charlie here on the night's activities and I guess you'd call it crew sitting. Go ahead, Charlie.
Okay, I'll start with when I came on shift last night after the PPS burn. When we got the crew ready to put them to sleep for the night, over the CSQ, we essentially powered down the spacecraft and got our last Agena tape dump and got the crew set up to go to sleep. And we got a couple of dosimeter readings. And after we got the dosimeter readings, we told them that the radiation was minor and less than some predictions might have been. So there was really no problem with that. And from then, the crew went to sleep. And we monitored their telemetry over all the manned sites, and then later on this morning through the Eastern Test Range. And the surgeons informed me that, as far as they were concerned, from their telemetry instrumentation, the crew was sleeping very well, and they had a very quiet night from that standpoint. Standpoint of the spacecraft, we had no systems problems developed during the night. We mainly monitored the temperatures and the various systems in the spacecraft to see if any trends developed. And the spacecraft was very stable throughout the night. And the same goes for the Agena. The biggest job we had to do during the night was to work out a revised flight plan for the day's activity. And I have that here, and I'll go over that very shortly. Let's see if we had anything that should bring up. Most of our passes over the night, in fact, all of them are what we call silent passes. We don't speak to the crew. We just turn on the telemetry and take a look at the spacecraft, and then subsequently turn the telemetry off with the time command at their LOS. Go through the day's flight plan activity very briefly for you here. The sleep period should have already ended. As a matter of fact, they were still asleep as we came over here, and the Carnarvon site was due to wake them up. The first hour after they wake up, there was an eat period scheduled, and during that period of time, this Carnarvon Pass, they were going to get this flight plan update. Coming over to the United States this time, we're going to get a fuel cell purge.
Yes, sure can. 1725, 17 hours and 25 minutes left. The flight plan update. 18 hours and 15 minutes on the Continental U.S. pass. We're going to get a general crew status report. How was the sleep? How was the rest? Purge the fuel.
Just take a brief look at the systems. 18 hours and 30 minutes at Canaries, we're going to give them a block update of a group of retrofire times that they keep on board for possible contingencies if they were out of contact with the ground. And they were going to Gyrocopus, the Agena, to TDA South. 19 hours and 5 minutes, Carnarvon, we'll give them a go, no go for 29-1. And load the Agena velocity meter for the first maneuver. 19 hours and 15 minutes, the spacecraft fully powered up. And from 1916 to 1936, the Agena recorder on. 1945, we're going to gyrocompass the Agena to TDA aft. And line the platform up in the spacecraft and cage it to the Agena. 19 hours and 45 minutes, also we were going to get an Agena tape dump, and the control center would check out the velocity meter load that we had. The burn is 20 hours and 21 minutes. That's the first height adjustment over with the PPS. And that's...
What's the GMT?
Yeah. What's the delta V on that? 340.
Minus 340 feet per second. Retrograde.
340 feet per second retrograde. 20 hours and 20 minutes, they start the preliminary EVA preparation for the stand-up EVA. And they have another E period at 21:20 to 22:20. 22:20, they have preparations for the co-elliptical maneuver. And that maneuver occurs about 22:38. And Stu Davis here can go over the maneuvers in a little more detail than this if you have questions. Final EVA preparation, 2240 to 2340. And 2352 is when we open the spacecraft hatch. And they perform the normal stand-up EVA that was planned, with the exception that they're having to delete the S-13 experiment. And they're going to do the S-5 photographs and MSC-8. 2458, the stand-up EVA is completed. And after they repressurize, they're going to maneuver the Agena to TDA forward. 25 to 2630, they stow the EVA equipment. And then after that, 26:30 to 27 hours elapsed to D5. 27 hours to 27:15, they're going to maneuver the Agena to TDA forward. That's for the NC1 maneuver. That's SPS maneuver, and it's a very small maneuver as we presently know it. It's about 4 feet per second posigrade, and it. At the same time, they're going to be taking S5 and S6 photographs after the maneuver. About 28 hours elapsed, they're going to do D5, mode D, and 28 hours and 55 minutes elapsed over to CSQ. Be another block update, flight plan report. Following that will be an E period, and 29 hours and 20 minutes, Hawaii will prepare them for the sleep period. That's a general rundown of today's flight plan activities. If you have any questions on the maneuvers, Stu Davis can give you a little more details on that.
Herb Caplow,
what's your fuel situation?
Okay, present We have used 297 pounds of oxidizer and 270 pounds of fuel. We have 200 pounds of oxidizer remaining and 180 pounds of fuel remaining in the spacecraft in terms of ohms propellants. That makes 380 pounds total propellant.
What does that mean in terms of what you expect to be able to accomplish?
Well, it means that we have less propellant available now in terms of what we had planned in the nominal flight plan, and to regroup and to go ahead and try to conduct the dual rendezvous, we're going to try to regain some of that delta V from the Agena by staying attached to the Agena all the way through the rest of the day into night and through some of the small tweak maneuvers. So hopefully we'll be able to complete most of the flight plan with the exception of some of the experiments. And that's where the sacrifice is made, particularly because we're still docked with the Agena. And we're going to try to regroup some of them, if possible.
Some of the experiments.
That's affirmative. Right now, we're trading off experiments in terms of time. Some of the experiments we had planned for tomorrow, for instance, we're going to go ahead and do today and vice versa.
And this is making use of the Agena's fuel.
That's affirmative.
Shorty?
I understand on the experimentation that although Van Lunny and company told us this morning that there was a probability they would cancel the ion weight measurement, that that's now been laid back on, but on a modified form. I'm wondering if you could amplify that.
Well, I don't have the details of that. That will probably take place in tomorrow's activities, and we just haven't planned it that far. But there's a good chance that they can regain some of that. And they're working right now with the experimenters to see what the effect of smaller maneuvers would be in terms of the ion wake in doing smaller maneuvers with smaller separation rates.
I'll put in Larry with it.
Terry's on the phone, but
go ahead, Shorty.
I wonder, Terry, if there was any particular significance why we don't have a CAPCOM or a doctor aboard the conference here today so that we might check on the physical condition. And
yeah, I think I can answer that very easily. The crew's not awake yet, and they wanted to be around.
They've got several stateside passes coming up in the very near future, and they both wanted to be there. Dr. Berry had just come in before we left, and Dr. Kelly wanted to stay with it, and I discussed coming over here, and he said he'd rather not. He wanted to see how the crew felt and so on.
Yeah, I think the CAPCOM we had on last night wanted to stay and talk to them this morning. In terms of the normal timing of this press conference here, we're a little later coming over the States, and that's why they wanted to stay there.
Thank you. Herb? Just to follow up on the fuel, how much fuel do you have to come back in with? I mean, when you start to re-enter, is there a figure, a cutoff?
Well, are you talking in terms of reshaping the orbit or the...
I'm talking about how much you leave for re-entry as a buffer.
Well, we have about a 27-pound propellant gauge uncertainty, but we don't intend to leave any in orbit. We'll use all of it if we can. Now, we generally plan to save about 6 pounds toward the end for retrofire preparation. But we intend to use it all.
John Young, United Press. Is there a possibility because of the fuel situation that you will have to forego the EVA schedule tomorrow? And when do you expect to know for sure?
Well, at this time, we anticipate completion of the umbilical EVA tomorrow. Now, it would depend, again, on the propellant situation going into the terminal phase of that rendezvous. There would be an opportunity, or at least a definite possibility of completing the total stand-up EVA. but they'll probably have a lot better hack on that later today.
Pete Bowman, Aviation Week.
How much should Delta V are you going to get out of the Agena that you would have normally used on the Gemini to do some of these tweak burns out of Novus?
Maybe Stu Davis can answer that.
Well, the tweak burns are very small as we see them right now. After we get through these two burns today, we're estimating about 15 or 20 feet per second at the most. And if we go and try to do the terminal phase portion with the Agena, that would be an additional 66 feet per second. But I'm not too sure if that's the way we're going to perform that or not.
So that's about 80 feet per second delta V that you're getting using the Agena rather than the Gemini.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Next to Pete there.
Haney said last night, you're going to, Dick Lyons, Daily News. Haney said last night that you're going to take a long look at the experiments on the second and third day to find out what could be eliminated to mesh in with the excess fuel consumption. What have you come up with so far?
Okay, of course, right now, we're trying to make an attempt to perform as much of the experimentation as possible. And right now, I think... can't give you a definite answer on that because some of the things that we're deleting today, we're going to try to pick up tomorrow. Now, right now, we think the S-13 that we plan to delete, we think we may be able to get that in the stand-up EVA. The D-5s that we had scheduled, we're going to try to pick them up tomorrow. And MSC-12 is another experiment that we may have to delete.
The second from the back there.
Do you have a good handle yet on the increased fuel consumption?
I think we know quite a bit about why more fuel was used, at least in terms of the rendezvous mechanics, and I can't explain that. Maybe Stu here has some remarks on that.
I'm afraid I don't have the answer.
But I think it can be explained by, I guess, taking a good deep look at the rendezvous mechanics, and right now, what I know about it was that the terminal phase initiate maneuver at least in the beginning, was a little bit larger than anticipated, and then these errors build throughout the terminal phase and tend to use more fuel.
I think the definitive answer won't be available really until we get the crew back and compare the onboard computations with the ground computations, and as Glenn Lunny mentioned this morning, make several runs with them until they finally iron out where the discrepancies might be. Shorty?
Mr. Davis, I wonder if you could go through a little bit of the mechanics here. We're talking about a PPS burn at 2021, minus 340 feet per second. Would you amplify that in terms of orbital parameters and tell us where you start and where you end?
Well, of course, we start off in the present orbit of about a 160 by 140, 413. And this is to get the apogee of the combined dock configuration about 77 miles below the target, the Agena 8 target, 7 miles, delta H. So that we predict approximately after this maneuver, we should be in about a 210 by 160.
Thank you.
The coalitic maneuver, the second maneuver in the sequence here, is to get us this delta H throughout the orbit, relationship between the two orbits. So we're predicting there about a 211 by 207 orbit.
Okay, over on this side.
Schumann, ABC. Regarding tomorrow's umbilical EVA, is that going to be done in the docked or undocked position? And can it be done undocked?
The umbilical EVA?
That's right.
Yes, it can. And that's the way it it intended to do the umbilical EVA before, was undocked.
And you still intend to do it undocked tomorrow?
It's as far as we plan now.
Thank you.
That's our intention.
Do you still plan for a retrofire at 7009 TET with Splashdown at 7046 TET?
Can you answer that?
As far as I know, that's a pretty approximate time.
Yeah, I think it'd be hard to give you a definite answer now in terms of what our maneuvers do to us and what orbit we finally end up in after the adjust maneuver, optimize the reentry situation.
Acro.
Getting back to the docking business, do you still plan to do, do Young and Collins still plan to do one each docking and undocking this afternoon?
No, that docking practice has been eliminated from the present flight plan. That uses quite a bit of propellant.
Macro.
Back to the S-13. Did I understand you to say that you still have hopes of saving it on the stand-up EVA? Or
yes.
Is it definitely...
We're going to make an attempt to save it.
I see. This is a change over the past hour or so.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to the Cape now and see if they have any questions.
Bill Hines, first of all, I want to pin this down. What do you think the possibilities are, the probabilities are, if nothing else goes wrong in the next few hours, of actually doing the second EVA? Is it better or worse than 50% probability?
That's kind of a hard question to answer in terms of probability. I think at this time we feel we're in a position to say that at least there is a fairly high probability of attempting the umbilical EVA, and at least we feel better about it than we did last night.
All right, and the other question I have relates to getting a little better handle on this heavy fuel usage. Some ideas that might present themselves would be equipment failure, and I understand that's been ruled out. Nothing was wrong with the equipment. Possibility that the pilot simply mismanaged his fuel is another one, and the possibility perhaps that he got some bad information from the ground. In other words, faulty ground planning, faulty pilot practice, or equipment malfunction. Now, could you discuss each of these and tell us how this thing shapes up in your mind? Which of these is the most likely explanation, or maybe there may even be another explanation that I haven't thought of?
Yeah, the first one was the equipment malfunction, and I think that's been fairly definitely ruled out. Now, as far as the next two, the pilot management of his propellants, and also the ground plan, I think that's definitely hard to relate those two situations as to the propellant usage. I think we do know that the propellant usage was can be attributed to orbital mechanics effects, and until, as Terry said, we get the crew back and reduce the data some, it will be pretty hard to pin this down to exactly why more propellant was used than we had planned.
You will then not rule out any of these three alternatives except equipment malfunction. There was no equipment malfunction, and the other two possibilities are open. Are there any other possibilities that you think of that I haven't thought of?
That's pretty hard. Difficult question there, and there could be something else. I can't think of anything right now, but we definitely know it's not an equipment problem, or at least a propellant leakage.
This is Harry Pease. We got propellant quantities of 180 pounds of fuel, 200 of oxidizer, and normally you, we recall it, you use more fuel than oxidizer. 180 pounds of fuel would be enough to match about 165 of oxidizer. Is it possible to adjust the mixture ratio in the thrusters so that you can use the total propellants on board, or will you have oxidizer left over?
The mixture ratio depends on how the propellant usage is divided up between the maneuver thrusters and the attitude thrusters. And using the maneuver thrusters, you actually require more oxidizer than fuel. And this is the reason that the Volkswagen tank, or the extra tank, was biased with oxidizer this time. So that due to all the maneuvers planned during this flight,